Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight for the first episode in our series that will span who knows how long, covering every James Bond movie eventually.
Two, maybe three podcasts.
Right, by Mike.
Hey everybody.
00 sadness, that's what I call you. Just so you guys know, we're not doing 23 straight episodes of James Bond.
What?
This is just a series that will take its time. So eventually, Mike and I want to get through all the James Bond movies, but it will not be 23 consecutive James Bond episodes. So if you're not a James Bond fan, please don't write us off for the next 4 months. But like I said, you can find, I didn't say this, but now I'll say it. You can find our website at fthismovie.net, where you can find every episode of our podcast. We're closing in on 200 episodes. You should follow us on Twitter. We're at FThisMovie. You can like us on Facebook and email us at FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com.
And subscribe to the YouTube page.
Yes, that's right. YouTube.com/FThisMovie. I forgot to say which movie we're doing, but people figured it out when they clicked on the episode.
Yeah.
But tonight we're talking about The Living Daylights. We sort of picked a random place to start. But before we talk The Living Daylights, Mike, have you seen anything good lately?
this might be a first on this movie. I'm going to talk about a Kevin James movie.
Here Comes the Boom?
I am going to talk about Here Comes the Boom.
I knew it wasn't Zookeeper, and I didn't think it was Paul Blart Mall Cop, and I was almost positive it wasn't Grown Ups, and probably not Grown Ups 2, and definitely not that Grilled movie he made with Ray Romano.
Are you just trying to stall so I don't
probably talk about Here Comes the Boom? Hitch. And definitely not The Dilemma.
Don't worry, I don't have a lot to say. I remember I came over here last month to borrow Psycho 2, and I told you that I'd started Here Come the Boom.
And I almost didn't let you borrow Psycho 2.
Exactly. But I'm happy to say I finished it.
Oh, thank goodness. Our long national nightmare at last is over.
On the way over here, I was thinking about this podcast, and I'm like, all right, he's going to ask me, what have I seen lately? Oh, God, it was Here Come the Boom was the last thing. So I don't have much.
Now, you're a fan of The Ultimate Fighting.
I am. I'm a fan of mixed martial arts, and maybe that, I'm sure that has something to do with.
Well, definitely. Why else would you have watched Here Comes the Boom?
I mean, that is why.
Salma Hayek?
I watched it. I do like Salma Hayek.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was kind of, I mean, it's as stupid as all those movies are, but sort of charming and funny at times. But yeah, I think I responded to, you know, playing the, hey, I know that guy game.
Right.
Because they have a lot of, MMA personalities.
It's one of those movies that's like endorsed by
UFC. Yes, it is a UFC, right.
So it's like when you watch Ready to Rumble and all the WCW guys are in there right. And you're like, this is practically a commercial for that non-sport.
Right, exactly.
Sorry, wrestling fans. I'm just kidding. Sports entertainment. Sports entertainment. The trailers for Here Comes the Boom made it look weirdly sappy. Like, part comedy, part heartfelt underdog story about an inspirational tubbo who learns to fight. I don't want to see it.
That's fine. I'm not. I'm not even gonna.
How does it compare to Warrior? Which is the only other MMA movie I can
think
of
and have not.
For real?
Seen, well, yeah.
You saw Here Comes the Boom before you saw Warrior.
I did.
I'm fascinated by the choices you made with
because it was during Scary Movie Month,
right?
I don't remember. Oh, I just watched Lords of Salem, and I thought I need to decompress. Here Comes the Boom is on. That should do the trick.
Have you incorporated the phrase "Here Comes the Boom" into any parts of your life?
Since you've known me, I've incorporated.
So that's literally it. Here Comes
the Boom. No. That's not it. Now I'm going to segue, obviously, into, and I'm not joking, another movie I saw recently was Federico Fellini's 8½.
Wow. That's some double feature.
You're right.
I've never seen 8½.
Okay. I have a weird relationship with Fellini. I took a Fellini class in college and was super excited about it. I went to school at Columbia College in Chicago. So it's downtown, and I lived in the northwest suburbs. So I would commute every day. I would take the train and then walk to class, and it was the first class of the day. So by the time I got to class, and it was second semester, so it was freezing out. So by the time I got to class, I just walked all that way. I'm sitting in a warm theater now. The lights go out, and an avant-garde black and white Federico Fellini movie comes out. I don't think I watched a single movie. So it's always been my goal in life to. I caught a couple of them, but 8½. I've owned it on DVD and Blu-ray.
Okay.
But had never, I could never get through maybe the first 20 minutes. And that's not to say it wasn't good.
I have those movies.
Oh my God. Maybe it's just the time I always chose to watch it.
Yeah.
But I finally forced myself to stick through the first 20 minutes, and I'm glad I did, because it is a really remarkable movie. I don't always respond to avant-garde stuff. Maybe I'm just too dumb. But it's just full of energy, and like Marcello Mastroianni is such a movie star.
Yeah.
Like, that guy is fantastic. So,
does anyone bring the boom at any point?
No, and that was probably the most disappointing
part. Yeah, no boom.
No boom, no Kevin James.
I've owned 8.5 on DVD, like you, for years, and still have never seen it. But I have seen 9, the musical, based on 8.5. I'm assuming it's pretty... Fergie is in 8.5, right? She sings a song about being the main character's prostitute mother. Have you seen 9?
No, I have not.
Don't see 9, by the way. It had a good trailer, but the movie's garbage.
Yeah, so I've heard.
All right, 8.5, here comes the boom.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's really good. And I've been binge watch some TV, which I know you don't want me to talk about.
What have you been watching?
Hannibal. So I guess it's sort of movie related.
Barely, but okay.
Sort of.
Is it getting better?
It's fine. I feel like my expectations were a little too high. So it's fine. It's good. It's not
okay.
It's not bad. I think I wanted a little bit more, but it's
rank it in comparison to the movies.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Well, it's no Silence of the Lambs.
Okay.
I actually like Hannibal.
Okay.
I may be alone in that.
No, you are not. I'm a big fan of Hannibal.
Oh, okay, cool.
Big fan. Not so much the book, but the movie's great.
I'm actually reading Red Dragon. I've never read any of the books. I'm reading
the Red only Dragon. One I've read is Hannibal, and it was not very good.
Okay. probably better than Red Dragon.
Okay. Manhunter?
Well, Manhunter's very... I haven't seen Manhunter in a long time, but that's very good.
Okay. So
maybe not as good as...
So it's below Sounds of the Lambs, Hannibal, and Manhunter. Perhaps better than Red Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Red Dragon is a movie I just can't even form an opinion on. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement.
It looks and feels like a real movie. These are talented actors.
Right.
This is well photographed. Why don't I care about any of this?
Right.
Even a little bit.
Have you seen Hannibal Rising?
No.
Okay, no.
I would probably see Here Comes the Boom before I would see Hannibal Rising.
I feel like I'm going to get to Hannibal Rising because I'm... Hannibal, while I realize I'm not being blown away by the show, it is rekindling my interest in Hannibal.
To see how Hannibal rises. I understand.
So, that and Doctor Who preparing for the 50th anniversary special.
Sure,
but,
sure, sure. I get it. Listen, I get it. I have watched a lot of James Bond movies.
Okay.
I guess we could talk about them very briefly. We probably shouldn't spend too much time on them if our plan is to someday podcast on each of them. But I felt like, in fairness, I should watch one from each Bond, minus Lazenby. So I watched a Sean Connery, a Roger Moore, a Pierce Brosnan, and a Daniel Craig. I rewatched You Only Live Twice. Rewatched Moonraker.
Okay. Interesting choice.
I rewatched The World Is Not Enough.
Okay.
And Skyfall.
Awesome.
Which one do you want to talk about?
The World Is Not Enough.
Okay. Go ahead.
I like The World Is Not Enough.
Me too.
I think, is that, where does that rank with the Brosnan ones?
I don't know. Is
GoldenEye your favorite?
I think GoldenEye is probably my favorite. And actually, Tomorrow Never Dies. It's probably neck and neck with Tomorrow Never Dies. Tomorrow Never Dies has some good things going for it. It also has a lot of terrible things, but I really like Michelle Yeoh in that movie.
I do too. She's awesome.
And World Is Not Enough doesn't have anybody on par with Michelle Yeoh.
Agreed.
But it has a better villain because I like Robert Carlyle.
Yep.
And I think Sophie Marceau is good in the movie. Where do you fall on the Denise Richards?
Normally, I'm not a big Denise Richards fan, but she doesn't bother me.
Yeah, there's a weird thing that's going on with that movie, because everybody says she's the worst Bond girl. Okay, I disagree. Not only because, she's not the best actress, but she's not even in the movie that much.
Right.
So I don't see how you could say she's worse than Holly Goodhead or whatever. Or that ice skater chick from For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah.
But the really sort of weirdly offensive thing that's going on with Denise Richards is that everyone seems to dismiss the idea or be insulted by the idea that she's playing like a scientist. Right. As though it's unheard of that, oh yeah, right, like she's a scientist. And I don't know where people are coming from on that. I understand, like, she doesn't normally play a lot of super intelligent characters and may not even project a ton of intelligence, but there seems to be this dismissal because she's kind of like a hot lady.
And that's probably it, but I think some of it has to do with the fact that she doesn't project a lot of the, however you just put it, she doesn't seem like a scientist.
I guess, and it's fine. But does Holly Goodhead? I mean, like, there's...
No.
The Bond series is full of unconvincing. I mean,
yeah.
Pierce Brosnan isn't a spy either. We just buy it because they're all pretending, right?
I'm not.
I think there's something weirdly insidious and possibly sexist with the way that people treat Denise Richards when it comes to that movie. And again, I'm not trying to be Denise Richards' white knight. I just think it's weird. The negative reaction to her. I understand her name is Christmas Jones. That is inexcusable. The Christmas puns are the worst. She is not at fault for any of that.
Right.
But yeah, I like The World Is Not Enough. And a lot of people, I think, consider it one of the lesser Bonds. I've seen it show up as the worst Bond movie.
That's crazy.
I agree with you. I don't... And again, the thing about these Bond movies, and I'm sure this is going to come up a lot, on this episode and on future episodes, is that everybody wants different stuff.
That will definitely come
from up. A Bond movie, yes. Right? So when we're talking about, like, during Scary Movie Month, we could talk about horror movies, and that category is so broad that there's all these different kinds of movies, and they all offer different things. So we can still have a conversation about horror, even though I like monsters and you like ghosts.
Right.
Hypothetically, you know, I know you're not a ghost person, but... it still all falls under the banner of horror, but we can get along because even though we want different things, we're still talking about horror. With James Bond, it's way more finite. It's just James Bond, and it's just these 24 movies?
Yeah.
24 movies, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if I have that right. Because where does, like, is that including Never Say Never Again?
It's not supposed to be included.
Okay. So is that
in the number?
So it's 24 without Never Say Never Again.
I think it's 24 without Never Say Never
Again. Got it. That's what I thought, but I wasn't positive. So not including Never Say Never Again or Casino Royale or whatever.
Right.
So it's a much more finite series of movies, and yet sometimes we can't be on the same page because even though we're trying to talk about James Bond, we want totally different things. So somebody who ranks The World Is Not Enough as the worst clearly is on board with what the Roger Moore movies have to offer,
exactly.
Which is the weird, campy nonsense. And that's okay, but just also understand that, like, I don't particularly like that stuff. I like a certain kind of James Bond movie, and so all of my favorites are the polar opposite of the Roger Moore series.
Yeah, I would agree. And where does Roger Moore rank with you? He's last. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is he not for you?
He is.
Okay.
He is, yeah.
He's the worst.
Yeah. Even George Lazenby, who's only in one, but he's still better than...
And Lazenby is helped by the fact that he was only in one, and honestly.
Right.
And he was in...
An awesome one.
An awesome one, but he was only in one. If Roger Moore had only done... Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die.
Which I'm not a fan of at all, but if he had just done that movie, he would not be ranking last on my list, probably, because...
Yeah.
It was the fact that he was in so many, and they were all, for the most part, bad, mm-hmm. and he just got to be so tired and old in the role, and he's so pervy.
Yeah.
So I'm not a fan of Roger Moore. Had Lazenby gone down the same path, maybe I would be saying Lazenby is my least favorite.
Right.
I don't know. What else did I watch? Oh, Skyfall. Skyfall's still great.
Yeah.
Still like Skyfall. Daniel Craig is probably still my favorite James Bond. Again, more so because he's what I want out of a James Bond, you know?
Exactly.
You Only Live Twice. I'm trying to come around on that movie. You know, the problem with that movie is that that's the movie that really embraces the goofy stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love the theme song. I like some of the locations. And at the end, when it's two armies of people shooting at each other, like, that's entertaining.
Yeah.
But... it certainly is the series embracing the side that I don't.
That it's heading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Moonraker, what can you say about Moonraker? It's probably... it might not even be my second least favorite Bond. It might be my third least favorite. Die Another Day is still, I think, the worst.
Yeah. I agree.
I would actually put Octopussy below Moonraker.
I'd have to see Octopussy again. Off the top of my head, like...
The problem is I can't see... I never want to see Octopussy again, because I agree. I need to watch it again.
Yeah.
That thought sickens me.
Off the top of my head, I'm with my least favorite is Die Another Day, but then I go to Moonraker.
I don't know. Because at least, again, Moonraker has...
Jaws.
Laser fighting in space, and it's awful, and it's not what I want out of a James Bond movie, but just as a movie, I can watch it for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And Octopussy, from what I remember, is so goddamn boring, even with the presence of Maude Adams.
Yeah.
And I can't get into Octopussy, but I do need to... I need to see it again, obviously.
Sure.
All right, so should we talk about The Living Daylights?
Please.
Okay. Again, this was just picked sort of at random. We were trying to pick a place to start, and I was kind of between A View to a Kill and The Living Daylights, and the reason for that is A View to a Kill is the Bond movie that I grew up with. That's the one that introduced me to James Bond.
Okay.
That and Never Say Never Again used to run all the time on cable growing up, so those were the two that I saw. I remember very little about Never Say Never Again at this point. That's not to say A View to a Kill is a good movie. That was the movie that introduced me to this character, James Bond. And it had the song that I recognized, and it had Grace Jones, who even as a kid, I was like, oh, that's a person that I've seen on TV.
Right.
And Living Daylights is a movie that seemed like a good place to start because it was sort of a reboot for the series. And it's slowly crept up its way on my list of favorite James Bond movies. What are your feelings on The Living Daylights?
Just to go back really quick to what you said, that it's sort of a reboot of the series. I believe, and it is, but I believe they wanted to do a total reboot of the series the way they did with Casino Royale.
Okay.
Just for what it's worth. Just a little trivia. But they obviously waited until Casino Royale.
Yeah.
The Living Daylights, well, first and foremost, it's probably my favorite James Bond poster.
Okay.
It's the one I remember most just as a kid. I mean, as a kid, like, movie posters were my internet, were my Ain't It Cool News.
Right.
Like,
so
that's got to be, I feel like that's in my top five movie posters. It's just ingrained in my head.
Nice.
Being a little kid, I love that poster. So want to get that out of the way. Living Daylights is...
By the way, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you bring up a good point, because Bond posters used to be really awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And really, from Pierce Brosnan on, I feel like they've been just...
Uninspired.
Uninspired. Every movie poster now is just a Photoshop collage of the cast. Like, so that was all the Brosnan movies, was just those. And then the Daniel Craig ones have been nothing. It's just, here's a shot of Daniel Craig laying on his back. Here's a shot of Daniel Craig standing with a gun.
There's a shot of a shadow.
Right. There's nothing suggestive about them. There's nothing interesting about them. Even A View to a Kill had two posters. One is the one of him back-to-back with Grace Jones that I don't really like. But the other one is the shot of Roger Moore is standing next to Tanya Roberts. And you just see, like, part of a helicopter or something.
Yeah,
it's it's cool.
No, the posters are great.
Yeah.
So that's my earliest memory.
Yeah.
Maybe my earliest memory of James Bond. Like, I don't have a specific Bond movie that I grew up with. I know I grew up with Roger Moore.
Right. Which is unfortunate.
It is. But
proof that we can both overcome nostalgia.
Right. Yes. But I can't single out a specific movie. I like Living Daylights, but to be honest, the Timothy Dalton ones are pretty... I don't have strong feelings either way.
Okay.
About them. And I think that comes down to what you brought up earlier, like what I want in a James Bond. I have a complicated relationship with Timothy Dalton's Bond. I think Living Daylights is great in that, especially when you watch these movies chronologically, which I know you and I have both done. So coming off of
Beautiful Kill.
Oh my God, just the cartoonishness of those Roger Moore movies, you know, you get to Living Daylights, which is much more grounded. I mean, there's still stupid James Bond moments, but it's a movie with like real characters and Timothy Dalton's performance, or his portrayal of Bond, is just so the opposite of Roger Moore, that like gone are not all, but a lot of the one-liners and the stupid, the creepy. He's almost a sexless Bond to me.
Yeah, the relationship between him and Kara is kind of weird. I actually really like it. They do a lot of things in the movie that I really, really like.
And just to interrupt really quick, I was looking forward to this podcast for no other reason than just, like, as a fan about this movie. Like, I know what a fan you are of this movie. When I finished watching it last night, I felt bad in that. I'm like, well, I want to feel strongly, like, one way or another. But knowing that you do, I was looking forward to hearing, I don't want to say your defense of Living Daylights, but just...
No, I...
But anyway, sorry.
Their relationship is interesting because they do a lot of things that I really like, and there's times where I don't even want it to be romantic because sometimes it seems more paternal than...
Yes.
...romantic. Like, he's protecting her, but not in a way like, I'm your white knight, to bring that up again.
Not at all.
But more like, right, I'm your dad.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the age difference, or maybe that's the way that Mariam Diallo plays the role, really kind of young and wide-eyed and naive, and it's fine. But then they do all this other stuff that I really like. Like, at the end, when they kind of reunite, they just hug. They don't even, like, make out. The first thing they do is hug each other.
Right.
It's adorable. Or there's shots of them, like, out on a date before it turns romantic because she's attached to someone else. And he's just basically accompanying her and trying to get information from her, but she doesn't know that. They're just, like, out on a date, and they're just laughing together.
Mm-hmm.
And you have never seen that in a James Bond
movie. No, that's true.
Ever. It's like, oh, these two people got to know one another and like one another before wanting to either use one another or fuck one another or whatever. You've never seen that in a Bond movie, really, before or since. Because
closest,
I think, another movie comes is Daniel Craig and Vesper Lynn.
I was going to say...
In Casino Royale, but that takes on such a different tone, you know, because of where that's headed.
Right.
You know, On Her Majesty's Secret Service has some of it, too, with Diana Rigg. And again, that's closer to Casino Royale in some ways, given what happens in both of those movies. But this is the only one where it's like, hey, these people get to know one another and like each other. There is no other... There's not, like, the femme fatale, the girl that he has sex with who dies, you know, that there is in every other James Bond movie. Like, once he meets Kara, she's it. And that is a refreshing change of pace as well.
It is. But I think I just, I don't even know that it's a criticism, but maybe I want my Bond to be, I not necessarily a pig and he has to sleep with 10 women in a movie, but someone who's interested. Does that make sense? Like, I never get the impression that Timothy Dalton is, like, he is all business.
He bangs that girl on the boat in the beginning.
Okay, well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't believe that for a second.
No, I don't really either.
You know, I'll be there in an hour, and she like has a glass.
I don't really either, but it doesn't give me the skeeves. And when
Roger Moore
does it, and even
when
Pierce Brosnan does it, it gives me the skeeves.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. No, I completely agree. I just think he's all business, and that's fine. But I think
so is Daniel Craig. I think Daniel Craig is all business too.
I think,
I like it, by the way. I'm happy about
that. I think Timothy Dalton is a precursor to Daniel Craig's Bond, for sure. But I do feel like, okay, I'm going to stick with that opening sequence, the pre-credit sequence.
Yeah.
When he says, you know, he's on the phone with whomever, and he says, I'll be there in an hour, and she pulls out a glass of champagne, and he says, make it two.
Right.
I don't believe that for a second.
You don't know if they're going to have sex, by the way. Maybe he's just like,
she
wants to have some conversation. I'd like to get to know this girl and maybe protect her like a father.
Whereas, well, I feel, yes, Daniel Craig is all business. I do think he would take the hour to fuck that girl.
I like, speaking of what we like about in a James Bond, I like the James Bond who's all business. I don't mind a James Bond that also has sex and plays cards and all that stuff. Like, that's all fine, and that's part of it, I know. But, like, I like the James Bond that is the job. And the thing about, like, the Sean Connery Bond, which I understand is the definitive Bond, like, he seemed like a guy who did the job, sort of as a way of getting the other perks. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't seem driven to do the job. It was just like, this is part of my lifestyle, and I'm a superhero. Roger Moore seems to, like, If they could just stop sending him on missions, he'd be fine, because he just wants to fuck young girls, and that's it. Like, right. He's totally uninterested in protecting the world or his country.
When you put it that way, he might be my favorite guy. Because that sounds like a great life.
Go Pierce on. Brosnan, I think, is a little bit more of a Sean Connery type. He's a little bit of a... He's a bit of a Nancy, but it's fine. It's fine. He's more of a kind of a playboy Bond.
He is.
Daniel Craig, to me, is a shark. He's the job. He's point me at something Absolutely. And I'll kill it.
Absolutely. But there's a charm with Daniel Craig that I don't
Well, the
feel
thing
with
about the,
Timothy Dalton.
See, I don't, I mean, I think Daniel Craig is charming, but, and maybe it's just because of Casino Royale, like, Daniel Craig plays Bond like a giant bruise. Like, I've had a bad childhood and a bad past,
yeah.
and so now I'm going to murder people that you tell me to murder because that's how I work this shit out. And I don't get that from Timothy Dalton. Timothy Dalton is just like an awesome Boy Scout.
Right. It was like, I completely agree with that.
And you had said that he's definitely a precursor to Daniel Craig, and I'm so glad that sort of people are now reassessing Timothy Dalton and starting to give him credit as being a good James Bond because... they've seen what Daniel Craig is doing, and they're like, oh, somebody was actually doing that in 1987.
Right.
You know, the problem with the Timothy Dalton Bond is that he only got two shots,
yep.
and it's totally schizophrenic. It's like if Sean Connery had made Dr. No and Diamonds Are Forever.
Right.
And we would say, I don't know what this is supposed to be.
Right.
Because they're totally different, which isn't to compare License to Kill to Diamonds Are Forever, but... they are so different. License to Kill is so just, like, dark and angry and 80s, and it's all just cocaine and drug dealers and Carrie, what's her name?
Yeah, when I said, like, Living Daylights didn't have, you know, let's say as much humor as the Roger Moore ones, like, License to Kill, like, strips whatever.
Totally humorless.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Living really, Daylights. Like, a nasty, mean-spirited movie.
Yeah.
And that's his only other chance to be James Bond.
I agree.
And so I feel like... he never really got a chance to grow into the part because we saw him do it one way and then we kind of saw him do it another way and we don't know which way was the way to go. I you know, obviously my heart lies with the Living Daylights and I would love mm-hmm. to see him go more that way. He definitely seems a little bit uncomfortable delivering some of the one-liners. And again, okay. I'm kind of okay with that because I don't love the one-liners, so, and again, that's part of it, like...
And I believe, for real, he was uncomfortable delivering the one-liners.
Oh, really? They give him terrible ones.
They do.
Like, what happened? Salt corrosion. Like, corrosion should never be part of your punchline. It just doesn't roll off the tongue. Like, oh, salt corrosion. Oh, James Bond. Salt corrosion. Good one.
He, from what I remember, he was... a big fan of Ian Fleming's novels.
Yeah.
And had a very, from the very beginning, very specific. I think he wanted to stick with Ian Fleming's version of Bond.
Yeah.
Which is more like the one he portrayed, more like Daniel Craig's. I believe. In fact, he was so had in his head how James Bond should be that he was auditioning or maybe even offered the part of James Bond for On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yeah.
And he said, he himself said, I'm too young.
That's amazing.
Which I find fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, that's almost 20 years difference.
Yeah.
Why do you think, though, that America, like, kind of rejected him as James Bond?
I don't know. I mean, it was America...
he wasn't a name.
Sure. Was it too much of a shift? From Roger Moore.
I guess, but were people that much in love with Roger Moore by A View to a Kill? Were people like, no, you got to keep going down this road?
People don't like change, and you had seven movies
Ugh.
With... I mean, I'm obviously just theorizing, but they had lived with Roger Moore for a while, and here's a complete shift. And you're right, I mean, they probably didn't know Timothy Dalton. That didn't help.
I feel like, Timothy Dalton was never given a chance... because people were already convinced they wanted Pierce Brosnan. And I know the way that all went down, they wanted Pierce Brosnan, Remington Steele wouldn't let him go, and so they had to go with somebody else, and so they gave it to Dalton. But that was one of those stories where, and now, that's how everything works, where casting stories are leaked out. I mean, the fact that it was news back then is a big deal because we didn't have a way of hearing that kind of stuff right. back in 86 or 87. But everybody got it in their heads that, oh, Pierce Brosnan should be the next Bond. And then here comes this guy who's not Pierce Brosnan, and that's just how everyone sort of treated him. I don't know. I don't know what it was that people didn't accept him. Yeah.
Maybe, again, I mean, maybe I'm alone in this, but I don't mean it to sound like I'm coming down on Timothy Dalton, because for all the reasons you just named, like, I'm glad he played Bond, and I would like to have seen more from him, but I do feel like there's, he was harder to get close to as an audience member, as stupid as that may sound. He's just, again, he's less charming to me, and all business to a point that, I don't know, that maybe...
And again, I'm not arguing with you, and I have the benefit of hindsight now. I didn't see the movie in 87. Well, I probably saw it in 87 on video. I didn't go see it in the theater. But, I mean, is Roger Moore easy to get close to? I don't know. Like,
it does fly in the face of... But I think people did... I don't know. I think people did respond to Roger Moore in this sort of goofy...
I guess.
I mean, not me, but right. I think the people responded to that goofy, I don't know, grandpa. Right. Reminded him of their dad. I don't know. Right.
He's like the uncle that won't stop grabbing your ass at the family party.
Right. I really don't know. I'm just theorizing.
And then they bailed on Timothy Dalton after two movies, and it was clear that they felt like they had just lost their way completely, because then they take 6 years between License to Kill and Goldeneye, which... At that time, was that the longest?
Yeah, it was the longest, yeah.
Yeah, is it still the longest?
No.
What's the gap between Die Another Day?
Die Another Day was...
And Casino Royale. Die Another Day, I want to say, is like 2002? And I don't know when Casino Royale came out. Either. Okay. No, that doesn't matter. One of those gaps is the longest. Yeah, you can... So, you know, they clearly had lost their way, and then they announced Pierce Brosnan, and Pierce Brosnan gets this huge warm welcome because, A, we all know
him. We know him.
Because he was on TV. And B, oh, finally, they got the guy that they should have had. Now, it helps that GoldenEye is a pretty solid...
It does.
A pretty solid James Bond movie. So it's like, the fact that that movie was a huge hit, I get, because at least it was good, but I feel like so much of it has to do with, like, oh, finally, it's Pierce Brosnan, and poor Timothy Dalton gets shit on.
Do you think that... I'm sorry, 2006 was Casino Royale.
Okay, so only 4 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is the longest gap. That's wild.
Do you think that's it, though? I mean, you probably had your finger on the pulse of it better than I did.
I don't have my finger on any pulse.
But, I mean, do you think it's people really are like, finally, it's this guy we've wanted?
Yeah. I 100% think that.
Okay, maybe it is.
And poor Timothy Dalton never got a chance, I think. And again, it doesn't help that the two movies are so different. I don't want to talk too much about License to Kill, because obviously we'll someday do a show on that as well. But The Living Daylights, to me, is so great in such an old-fashioned, like, adventure movie way. It's not crazy violent, despite coming out in 87. It's not mean-spirited the way that, you know, License to Kill and even, I think, some of the Pierce Brosnan ones are. It's not goofy the way that so many of the Roger Moore movies are.
Right. There's no...
It has like a sweep that feels so old-fashioned.
Yeah, no, I get that. And there's no... I also like that there's no specter. No one's trying to take over the world.
Right. It does, I will admit, have a villain problem, I think. I think Brad Whitaker is a really bad villain.
Sure, yeah.
I think he's really bad.
I just mean his, you know, the plan.
Right.
Their evil plan isn't
right. They're just selling drugs, basically, right? But Brad Whitaker is a bad villain, and you get this sort of dynamic. We're going to be skipping around, obviously. This dynamic climax where they're hanging out the cargo net on the back of this plane, and it's great.
Awesome.
So many great stunts in this movie, and you get the feeling that it's really Timothy Dalton. And supposedly he did do a lot of his own stunts. Now I don't know, you know, what that means, but just really. You know, it's the movie that kind of gets back to good, like, second unit directing, really good practical stunts, and coming off of Roger Moore for years where the guy couldn't even kick someone
convincingly. I was going to say, couldn't throw a punch.
Yeah, I mean, nothing was convincing in any of his movies. So now you have a James Bond that you're like, oh yeah, this guy beats ass.
He's physical.
Yes.
Yes.
So you have that great finale, and then, and I kind of forgot about the way this works out, because then you get to the scene, I mean... the climax is Brad Whitaker, like, standing over a model. You know? Oh, the devious Brad Whitaker. It doesn't have quite the drama of, right, Ernst Stavro Blofeld. Brad Whitaker.
The collector in me?
Yeah.
That scene pains me, because, like, I love his, just, like, the layout of all the stuff in his room. Like, I don't want to see it destroyed. The money and time they probably put into that, that really bugged me. And
correct me if I'm wrong, Jodan Baker is one of only two actors to play different parts of the series, him and Maude Adams, right?
Yeah.
I gotta say, I like him better in the Brosnan movies. As much as he reminds me of that awful hillbilly guy from the Roger Moore movies.
I
can't remember that guy's name.
I don't know.
Damn it.
Hope you don't. That guy made me want to bail on the James Bond movies. That is the worst. I know it's like how the British must view Americans.
Right,
like this.
Right. But Jodan Baker, in especially in GoldenEye, is definitely more in that tradition.
Yeah, I guess.
But I like him better in GoldenEye than I do as the villain.
I completely agree.
In Living Daylights. A couple other things that are different in Living Daylights that I don't like. I don't like the Felix Leiter.
No.
Who only gets one or two scenes.
Right.
And is replaced by another actor in License to Kill, who then has his legs bitten off, because that's that movie. And his wife murdered on their wedding day. Yay, License to Kill. James Bond. Fantasy. And I don't like Moneypenny, and I feel bad about that. She's pretty.
Right, but she's not, it's such a,
and Lois Maxwell had gotten so old, so I'm glad they didn't go with Lois Maxwell, because it's embarrassing to watch Roger Moore, it's watching two old people flirt and try and remember each other's names. She's pretty, but there's nothing there, and maybe that speaks to what you're saying with Timothy Dalton, that he just doesn't connect with the ladies. I don't know.
He didn't for me. But yeah, no, I agree that she's pretty, but she's, I don't know. Like, I want my Moneypenny to look sort of like my, you know, daughter's kindergarten teacher. You know what I mean? Like, as opposed to some sex.
I really like the Moneypenny that they got in the Brosnan movies. Yeah. I could be wrong. Is her name Samantha Bond? I want to say her real last name is Bond.
That's awesome.
And I actually really love what's her name in Skyfall.
Yeah.
Naomi Harris. I'm struggling with names right now. But yeah, I don't love some of the staples, you know, the actors that they cast as the staples in this movie. And they don't factor into the movie that much. They each have one or two scenes, so it's not like it's a huge deal.
Right.
Do you have a favorite set piece in the movie?
You mentioned it already, but I love the plane towards the end when they're fighting on the outside of it. That is
pretty great. Awesome. This is one of the few movies, and every Bond movie, you know, sort of does that globe hopping, like, we're in this exotic location and now this one. And honestly, usually I don't care all that much. This is one of the few that I feel benefits from the different locations, that it opens in the snow and it ends in the desert, to me, sort of reflects part of what I like about the movie, that the energy of the movie.
Okay.
I don't know. The thing that always stands out to me that I really like in the movie, and this is not one of the bigger set pieces, I love when they sled down the hill in the cello case, using the cello to steer them. And then I love the bullet hole, and then I call it, it's a callback at the end.
It is.
And he throws it over the thing and then catches it. He says, "We've nothing to declare." And she says, "Just a cello." It's not, that part's not great. But I love the chase in the cello case. I don't know. I just thought that was kind of an inventive way to do that sequence, because they've done so many goddamn ski chases.
I was just going to ask, like, how many ski chases do you think they've done?
Yes.
A lot.
What's the one? Oh, now, in Die Another Day, they're not in the snow, right?
There's ice stuff.
Is that what I'm thinking of?
Yeah, there's like a...
Oof. Isn't there a water sequence, though?
Halle Berry gets out of the water.
Oh, yeah, no, that's what it is. No, there's definitely all that ice stuff at the end, but that's, I don't think that's what I'm thinking of. I'm remembering some really awful digital effects.
Be.
Yeah. And again, that's another advantage of the Living Daylights. It doesn't have all this digital nonsense.
No, like, I know. That is great.
Real planes fly and crash into things, and real cars are crashing. And
I do love how they try to squeeze in the, like, this 80s soundtrack. Just the one killer who always has his headphones or something. Right, so it's an excuse to play this clip.
Oh, okay. So what do you think of the theme by A-ha?
I don't know. It's not one of my favorites.
It's not one of mine either, and I feel bad because I know lately in the comments on the site that a few people have said that they really like that one.
I don't dislike it. I just don't.
See, to me, I'm torn because part of me wishes that, like, the Duran Duran song had been used for this, only because that, to me, represents a real attempt to shake things up and say, okay, this is newer, younger, it has a different energy. And so I wish that that had been sort of used to rebrand this Bond. And, like, we have a new start, and we're having this edgier, you know, it's the only time Duran Duran has been called edgy, but I don't know, compared to Sheena Easton, I guess they are. Or All Time High. Oh, God, I hate Octopussy. So I kind of wish they had used it for the Dalton Bond, but at the same time, like, Living Daylights isn't really, like, the edgy Bond. You know what I mean? It's way more old-fashioned.
Right. It probably feels edgy coming off of...
Right. Well, anything feels edgy coming off of Grandpa Moore. But, so, even the Living Daylights, even the A-ha song, which feels more like an attempt to sort of reproduce what they had done with Duran Duran, mm-hmm. is a miscalculation to me.
I agree. It's not my favorite.
No. I wish they had done something a little bit more... traditional.
Who did World's Not Enough?
Garbage.
Oh.
I like that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like two of the Brosnan ones. I like Tomorrow Never Dies, which I know I'm alone in that because everybody says they like the Katie Lang one better. But I actually like the Sheryl Crow one. And I like the Garbage one. I do not like Tina Turner's Goldeneye. I
have a soft spot because my wife does a hilarious impression of that. But it's not good.
I cannot get on board with that.
And the Madonna one's garbage.
That's the worst. Yeah. That one's the worst. Exactly. So part of me wishes that they had done something for Living Daylights that felt more like one of the 60s Connery themes, you know? But whatever. Like, I understand the position that they were in. But again, that's one of the things that I like about the movie that I think really works about the movie is that for a Bond movie... with the exception of some of the political stuff in terms of the Soviet Union and Afghanistan and that kind of stuff, that it feels kind of timeless. It doesn't have the 60s kitsch of some of the Connery Bonds. It doesn't have the Roger Moore garbage of the 70s Bonds. You know, it feels old-fashioned, but not in a way that feels dated.
Right.
I don't know.
Where does Timothy Dalton rank... for you? I know you just said this on the website.
I mean, I'd have to put him third.
Okay.
Because Daniel Craig is still my favorite.
But ahead of Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, definitely ahead of Pierce Brosnan, okay. Yeah. And Pierce Brosnan used to rank higher for me, and it's only been in recent years as I watch the movies again that he's starting to grate on me.
Right, I'm sort of in line with you.
Yeah. He's not as good as I think we all once thought.
Right.
And again, maybe some of that is that his movies aren't all the best, but...
Yeah, I mean, he's not getting, like, some of the... He goes back to Roger Moore jokey.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's just...
Yeah, by Die Another Day, everyone only speaks in one-liners. Yeah. It is the worst. Just watch any scene with him and Halle Berry, and you will want to kill yourself.
Right.
And Living Daylights, again, to its credit, dials back on a lot of the one-liners.
I think a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. It's fine that you don't like it. Well, where would you rank it?
It's not that
I
feel like
it's not that you don't like it. It's just that you don't like it. You know what I mean? That makes sense in my head.
I'm coming off much more negative than I want to.
Yeah, really.
It's just, I don't know. It's sort of middle of the road, and I think that's just how I feel about Timothy Dalton, and I just feel bad about saying that because I'm on board with you. Like, I like that we're starting to look at him in a better light.
Yes.
But at the same time, I'm being a hypocrite because I still don't.
He doesn't do it for you.
He just doesn't know.
And he's just fine because don't believe that he fucks lots of ladies.
It's not just because I don't know how to.
So far,
say
that's
it
the only thing I've heard you. That's your only criticism.
Bringing up his lack of charm.
Dude barely gets his dick wet. Come on, Bond.
I just. I just don't. Yeah, he just doesn't.
Why do you hate a Bond that respects women?
I know, that's how I.
He's the only Bond that respects women at all. He is.
Uninteresting. Right? I'm
Roger
really,
Moore, I will say, loves women. Roger Moore loves women to a fault.
He does.
His Bond is obsessed with women. Pierce Brosnan, again, has a little bit of that. Sean Connery and Daniel Craig, women are, like, repositories. Like, yeah, they are really just something to fuck. Timothy Dalton respects women. Why do you have a problem with that?
I'm trying to figure out how to dig myself out of this hole. I simply don't respond to him. I love every second Daniel Craig is on the screen. I can't get enough of it. Even in Quantum of Solace. Like, really? I think the only reason maybe Quantum of Solace kind of works for me is because I get to watch Daniel Craig's Bond.
Yeah.
For 2 hours. Or just Timothy Dalton. Just for whatever reason, it just doesn't connect with me. I'm glad he exists in the Bond universe. Yay for him. But I don't love him.
Where do you rank him?
Like,
ahead of Roger Moore.
Yes.
Ahead of Lazenby?
Yes. But I feel like
behind Pierce Brosnan.
But if you showed me the four Pierce Brosnan movies right now,
deep. Yeah.
I might disagree, because I remember last time going through the Brosnan movies feeling very much the same way you said you just did, that he started to. You didn't like him quite as much as you remembered liking
him. Yeah.
And I remember feeling that way as well, but I don't know. I'm going to keep using this word charming. I want my Bond to be charming. I want women to, like, fall
Sam,
all over.
Sam, what is it about me that I do? And again, this is just...
the crazy person.
No. This is just this intangible thing that, like, we can't reason our way out of it. If I find him charming and you don't, like, that's just how it is. That's not...
I know.
One of us isn't broken, except that one of us is.
I think there is a charm to
again, how seriously he takes his job. I think there is a charm to the way he protects Kara. I think there is a charm to the way that he isn't a chauvinistic asshole.
All right, let me try this again. He's all business, and I like that.
Yeah.
He can throw a punch.
Yes.
He's tough. I believe he can fire a gun.
Yes.
He's a very good, you know, MI6 like agent.
Yes.
When it comes... Okay, hold on.
All right.
Sean Connery, like my favorite... I love Sean Connery as Bond, and I believe he could throw a punch, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. My favorite...
Sean Connery probably could throw a punch, but, like, Sean Connery would rather not.
Okay, fine. Okay.
And Sean Connery's great. I'm not...
Yes.
But again, the reason I like Daniel Craig, and the reason I like Timothy Dalton is because, like, yeah, they will fuck you up gladly.
I completely agree. But when I think of Connery, one of my favorite Bond moments is in Dr. No, the first time you see he and Moneypenny interact, and just how, just his, the way he flirts with her, and the way they flirt with one another, for whatever reason, like, that's, in my head, that's my James Bond. Like, that's what I want in my James Bond. I want my James Bond to be able to throw a punch and kick ass like Daniel Craig.
Okay.
But I also want, I want that charm. I got to come up with a different word.
Yeah, no, I understand it.
That Sean Connery has, like, specifically in that scene with Moneypenny. I think it's fantastic.
And by the way, when I say those comments about Sean Connery, that doesn't count Dr. No, and it doesn't count From Russia with Love. Because in From Russia with Love, he will fuck a person. Yeah. He will fuck a guy up. Like, that movie is very close to being my favorite.
It's awesome. But
it's
so
in the later ones where he's, like, yawning. And I see what you're saying, because the interaction that he has with that Timothy Dalton has with Moneypenny in Living Daylights is definitely more of, like, are they brother sister?
He's just uninterested, and that's fine. But I don't know.
So it's fine that you hate it. to me, this...
By the way, every podcast I'm on,
you
bring up movies that you claim I hate, and I get so frustrated because I can't articulate that I don't hate them, like Ghost Protocol.
You do hate Ghost Protocol, right? Because you don't feel like Ethan Hunt, like, is charming enough with the ladies. Maybe you haven't seen Mission Impossible 2, where he does that sweet driving flirtation with Tandy Newton. To me, Living Daylights and On Her Majesty's Secret Service are like the two great underrated Bond movies. Like, everybody loves Goldfinger, everybody loves From Russia with Love.
Yep.
People are kind of split on Her Majesty's Secret Service. You know, opinion has changed. Yeah, definitely. And I think Living Daylights is sort of undergoing some of that same reevaluation. Well, and I feel like those two movies are the gems in the Bond series. Not that they're the best in the series, but they are among my favorites.
Would you say they're the gems though, because they're the
they're not necessarily
their underdog.
Yeah. They're not necessarily better than From Russia with Love. It's right. Just that everybody loves From Russia with Love, and here's two movies that don't get enough attention that deserve it because they're awesome. And actually, yeah, Majesty's Secret Service, From Russia with Love, and I think Living Daylights would make up my top three. And yours would be Casino Royale.
I love Casino Royale.
Skyfall and Quantum of Solace. I get it. You love Daniel Craig. I get it.
I think one of the, and we could say this for the Majesty's Secret Service.
I know. If we run out of podcast. All of our like Bond stuff, we got like 23 more of these to do. It's like, how many times do we re-rank our favorites? But I'll bet they're different. I'll bet by the time we get to like number 10, I will have a different opinion on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are your favorites right now?
My favorites, I love Casino Royale.
Okay.
I love Goldfinger. And okay. I love maybe From Russia with Love.
Yeah, From Russia with Love is the bomb.
Yeah.
And that was one that really just on the most recent rewatch, I was like, holy shit, that's a great movie.
It's awesome. Yeah. Robert Shaw is awesome.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I want to spend more time with it, but I think Skyfall is awesome. And I have a feeling that movie will.
I like Living Daylights better. Boom.
Wow.
Boom. Take it. Deal with it. Skyfall. I love Skyfall. Skyfall's in my top five, right?
Yeah.
I forget what my number four is, but Skyfall would be fifth. Four might be probably Goldfinger.
Okay.
Skyfall has a lot of great stuff. Like, a lot of great stuff, especially if you're a fan of the Bond series.
Yeah.
And I tried to make this point to somebody in a comment recently that I had said, I feel like Skyfall's a smart movie. And they said, well, how is it smart? Because it does this and this and this, and it's all stupid. And, like, yeah, there's some ridiculous plotting in that movie. Watching it this time, I couldn't get over the chain that's conveniently on top of a moving train. Like, why is that chain there? Who cares?
You don't know about train chains?
Yeah, right. Which I believe was the original title for Skyfall, right? James Bond will return in Train Chain.
Train Chain.
Who's performing that?
Martin Turner.
Oh.
They brought him back.
It should be Katy Perry. What if they get Katy Perry to do the next Bond thing?
That would be... I mean, are you asking me to do an impression?
Would you mind? Does anyone do a Katy Perry impression? I don't know.
No, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I can do... Metallica, Green Day, Pearl Jam, any of those.
All right, so Pearl Jam does Train Chain.
Train on the train.
I like it. Skyfall has lots. But Skyfall is smart about being a James Bond movie, and it does a lot of cool stuff. If I have a complaint about Skyfall, I have a few.
What?
If I have one major one, it's that the single best, most exciting sequence is the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'll give you that.
And it fails to top itself the whole movie, and that's a problem, you know? And so I find myself more entertained by Living Daylights. I think Living Daylights has little high points all throughout it, you know, and it gets to that cool climax, not the part where they're fighting over a set of models, but before models. That, when they're hanging off the back of a plane, which is awesome.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the Bond girl, Kara?
I'll put it to you this way. I Google imaged her last night because I wanted to see more.
She's kind of a weird bird.
Like she looks like a bird?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm not using British slang.
I was going to say that.
She's a weird bird.
I think she's cute.
No, I'm not saying she's ugly. I'm just saying she's somewhat bird-like.
All right.
You should see her in a movie called Extro.
Really?
Yeah. Extro is not a movie you should see, but you should see her in the movie Extro. Oh, you know, her sister is the sister on Wonder Years, right?
No, I did not know that, really.
Boom, there you go. Knowledge.
My God.
So what are your feelings about her, aside from thinking she's pretty and wishing that James Bond was a bigger asshole to her?
God, I hope this. I hope we have to re-record this podcast like The Exorcist one, because I'm going to really formulate how I want to talk about him.
Should he, like, have sex with her and then slap her? Is that kind of what you're looking for? Or just not call her? Are you fine with just emotional abuse?
I think she's fine for Timothy Dalton's Bond.
If that makes sense. So because she's boring and vanilla?
Like, I mean, she's someone you take out for coffee, so she's perfect for the living daylights. I mean, she's fine. She's not one of my friends. I don't know who my favorite Bond girl would be. But.
Well, why don't you think about that while I say this?
Please.
She's not one of my favorite Bond girls either, because, again, she does play the part so sort of, like, young, and that's fine. But their relationship is one of my favorites in the series, again, for the reasons that I pointed out earlier, that I just like how much you see them get to like one another, and that he doesn't have eyes for anyone else, A, because it's part of the job, and B, because he does start to like her, and you get the feeling he's not interested in other people. Now, I know you would love it if he would constantly sneak off from his security detail
to bang
a chick in the coat room.
How to recover.
But I like that he's faithful to cover. There is a garbage scene, though, a garbage scene where she betrays him, she turns on him, just for the sake of, like, drugging him and getting him to board a plane, and then once they're on the plane, she's like, listen, I'm sorry. I lost my head for it. I mean, it's just, it's a turn that is only for the sake of convenience, and it's problematic. I'm not saying it's a perfect movie, okay? I'm not saying that. I just happen to really, really like it. So who is your favorite Bond girl?
Man, I don't know.
Well, this is going to be coming up probably on every Bond podcast we do.
We're just going to rank.
It's called Bondcast.
We're just going to rank things from now on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Man.
We have nothing else interesting to talk about. You hate The Living Daylights, so we can't really have a discussion about it.
Oh, wait till we get to The License to Kill.
Why?
I hate.
Do you really?
No, I'm just kidding. Oh. I'll just try to pick the other Timothy Dalton movie.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of License to Kill, so you will not get this impassioned defense from me on License to Kill.
But would you say most people prefer License to Kill to Living Daylights?
I did when I was a kid. Like, these were the two. Okay. View to a Kill, Never Say Never Again were the Bond movies that I watched on HBO. Living Daylights and License to Kill were the Bond movies that I checked out from my library and watched a lot.
That's hilarious.
So you could tell how old I was, because now I could leave the house to walk down the street to the library. Didn't have a video store membership, but I could get a movie for free from the library. So I was around 10, 11, 12. And so those I saw a lot. And License to Kill was definitely my preferred Bond movie at that time, because it has more action. It feels more like an 80s action movie. There's a shark that bites a guy's legs off. That one guy explodes in the pressurization chamber. So I was like, ooh, that's all neat. And now I watch it and I'm like, this is not that good. It's not that it's a terrible movie. It's just, again, it's not what I want out of a James Bond movie.
No, I understand. Who's your favorite?
It feels much closer to Quantum of Solace, actually. I think Quantum of Solace might be better. I need to revisit it, but I think those two movies are more of a pair.
Okay.
Who's my favorite Bond girl?
Yeah.
Britt
Eklund.
I'm a fan of Britt Eklund.
Britt Eklund.
Yeah. No, listen, I love Man with the Golden Gun just because of Britt Eklund and Maude Adams, but my problem with Britt Eklund as a Bond girl, she's adorable.
Adorable.
But really stupid.
And so you couldn't see her as a scientist?
Exactly. I laugh at the idea. No, the way that they write her character is pretty insulting to all women. So I have a hard time naming her as my favorite Bond girl.
Notice how easily I know
her. The one who's the easiest to subjugate? That one. That broad. No, so I kind of lean towards Pussy Galore only because she is kind of, she hits back, you know, and I dig that.
Do you dislike Xena on a top?
No, she'd be up there too. Yeah, she's like pretty fantastic. I have other favorites that I can't think of right now. I mean, I love Diana Rigg in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, and I like Michelle Yeoh in Tomorrow Never Dies. Yeah. Again, another one who
could kick ass.
Exactly, and I kind of dig that. Of course, Christmas Jones.
Yeah.
And Jinx. Always Jinx.
Why couldn't we have gotten the Jinx spinoff?
Oh, we were so close.
We were.
I hate that movie.
It's terrible.
I wonder what movie we should do next. You guys in the comments, again, remembering that we are not going to just do Bond movies from here on out, but we are going to continue to do Bond movies, and in the comments, you should make a case for which one we should do next.
Please. Maybe I'll be back?
I don't know. You didn't do so hot on the Living Daylights. You didn't pass my Living Daylights test. No, you will be back. We're going to do all of them, but I hope you come around on my man T-Dolls. And he's awesome. I don't understand. Like he turned it down when he was too young.
No, I know. That's awesome.
He knows what's up. He got fucked over. Have you seen Everything or Nothing, I think it's called? That documentary?
Yeah.
I know. He's not bitter, but like he's maybe a little bit bitter because he got fucked over unfairly.
On paper, Timothy Dalton is the coolest.
Yeah, it's just in practice. It's where just like, oh, where's his boner?
Why can't he? More boner!
Well, then you're going to love. So Pierce Brosnan is better.
I don't know. That's. I don't know. That is not actually.
Your team,
scar.
Brosnan. That's fine.
Connery and Daniel Craig are my two favorites. Depending on my, you know, maybe which one I'm watching at the time, I can go back and forth with the two of them.
Okay.
And my bottom two are. Roger Moore at the bottom. Then
Timothy Dalton.
Lazenby.
Oh, okay. So but Timothy Dalton is slightly Robert. Better than Lazenby, and the one we agree is the worst James Bond. By the way, there are people whose favorite is Roger Moore.
Oh, I
like,
know.
A lot of people, Roger Moore is their James Bond.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Again, I'm trying to be open-minded and say we all want different things from a James Bond movie. So lots of people really like the goofy shit in Moonraker, you know? I think Roger Moore made a couple of okay Bond movies. I like The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yeah.
I think For Your Eyes Only is okay.
I like
the first time I saw it was only a couple of years ago, leading up to Quantum of Solace. I rewatched all of them in order. Mm-hmm. That was the first time I had seen two or three of them, including For Your Eyes Only. And I think because it was coming off of Moonraker, right? It was
helps.
Like, oh, cool, a grittier, more realistic Bond movie.
Yes.
And so I kind of held it up as one of his better efforts. And it probably still is. But then when I rewatched it again, I don't know, 6 months ago, I was like, oh, this is not as good as I remembered it being. Because there's still Lynn Holly Johnson. And there's still the opening 10 minutes where they kill Blofeld in the worst sequence in any Bond movie, maybe. Except for the sped up chase in... why can't I remember the name of Live and Let Die, right? I keep forgetting the name of that one, because that's one of my lesser favorites as well. But people love Roger Moore. I don't know. Timothy Dalton, I think, is the underrated Bond. So there.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I agree with you. I just...
All right.
I just not... I mean, sure, he's underrated. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this thing kind of petered out.
I like him. I do. I just... Not as much. I don't know.
All right.
He's not totally what I want in a Bond, but in some ways he is.
Just not in the ways of love. Not in the ways of love. I don't feel like he's not. Okay, we're done. We're wrapping up, everyone. But I feel like he's not a Bond who would order a martini, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, then. Why couldn't I have said that? Yeah.
Listen, I'm the brains of this operation. No, I'm not at all. But is Daniel Craig? A Bond who orders a martini?
Daniel Craig could order whatever the hell he wants to order.
He orders a Heineken, right?
I'd buy anything. The guy says or does.
Yeah, I don't know. I get what you're saying about Timothy Dalton. Again, we all want different things from a Bond. And when we get to License to Kill, he's going to be a totally different James Bond, and even I'm going to be agreeing with you. Like, yeah, this isn't what I want. But in The Living Daylights, I think he's great. I think The Living Daylights is great, and even you agree that it's the best. Even if you were talking about the poster. So thank you for claiming it is the best, and you're welcome. And we will talk to you guys soon. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week with a non-Bond show. Maybe we should do four in a row, and we can call it... Come on, man. Four non-Bonds. Come on, man. Get in there. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Train chain.
Oh, that wasn't even Eddie. Okay, let me do train, train, ah. Now, man, that now I'm doing Metallica. Train, train, ah. That's Metallica.